Hello there, fellow humans. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Jessica Jost, and this is Interview with You. Today, not yet with you, today with Linda. Ladies and gentlemen, Linda is an absolute badass and a true warrior. After enduring 5 years of infertility treatments, her dream finally came true, only to face a heart-wrenching tragedy. Her twin pregnancy took a devastating turn when one of her babies passed away in the womb during the 7th month. Did Linda break down? Absolutely. But she's here today to share her incredible journey of resilience, hope, and the strength to find light in the darkest of times. Her story is a beacon for anyone navigating their own personal hell, proving that even the deepest pain can lead to profound courage and inspiration. So without further ado, let's dive into Linda's powerful story. Hello and welcome to my podcast. I hope everybody's doing great today. Today, I have another precious guest, Linda, coming here to share her story about infertility in our little series. Welcome, Linda, and thanks so much for coming here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I will say a little about you. You are married for 10 years, just like myself, evidently. You have two children now who are 6 and 8 years old. And your journey to the first pregnancy took 5 years. So please tell us the story from the beginning.
So my journey was very long, very painful at times, and last five very, very, very long years. Mm-hmm. And basically we started from scratch. As I said earlier, I have picked up my folder with all my, you know, reports and everything, all my journey, just to remember, because it was some time ago. And basically, when I met my husband, we were, I think, just 30 years old. And very quickly, we decided that we just want to have kids together after a couple of months. So we decided to stop protecting ourselves. And after 9 months, as I read in the report, we went to see a doctor saying, like, look, it's been 9 months and nothing happened. So, like, what can we do? And he told us, like, yeah, so try some more time. And, you know, if not, you come here and we run some tests. So we did. And they didn't find anything. So there was no reason. Both of us are fine. Everything's fine. We did all kind of exams for me and for my husband. And there was nothing wrong with us. We're just probably not matching or something. So very quickly we started. The first was the ovarian stimulation. So basically they just stimulated the ovaries and then they let the cycle be natural. And, you know,
and when they stimulate the ovaries, is it like they give you medication?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we did three cycles and it didn't work. Okay. So we moved up, we speed up, we went to the in uterine insemination, the IUI. My body didn't react. So the first was a big failure. They had to change the medication and they had to double the dose because it was not working. So there was like a couple of one or two lost cycles. And I think after three cycles, which was funny because I was listening to your podcast with Elise, and she mentioned that there is a higher probability when you do more tries. This is not what I was told. And basically after three cycles, we stopped because they said it's not going to work. And we just recommend IVF.
Maybe it depends case by case, I suppose. Maybe it is individual.
Absolutely.
I just want to say this was all in the Boller Clinic at the
yes,
time,
absolutely.
Right?
So this is 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. And it was really difficult because with my husband, we were the first one in our group of friends that we started talking about having kids, you know, instead of like still going out parties. And and then suddenly, you know, you have one friend who tells you he's pregnant, and you know, you have another friend who being pregnant, and you know, then third, and you're still there and nothing. And you know, it's it's very lonely journey because the life around you is moving, but you are stuck in the nowhere. And you know, I remembered when I was thinking about, I was like preparing and thinking about this podcast, I had like a couple of moments that I clearly remember, that like when some of the friends told me like, oh, I'm pregnant, and we had friends for dinner, and I was like doing dishes, and I wanted to cry, and you know, but you have to keep the face, and you know, you are happy actually for the person, but on the other hand, you are like shattered inside. And I was speaking to another friend, and I was like, I could see that you were crashing down. And I even had another friend who told me, I remember after one of the failure, who told me, who invited me for christening of her daughter. And I told her like, sorry, I just had like bad result. I can't go tonight. I just don't feel like being around kids. And she was like, oh, you're so selfish. Like, how can you do this for me? So in a way it cleaned out people around us. So it's, just,
yeah, it's, you know, it's hard, but at the same time, I want to say, I think until you go through it, it's hard to understand.
That, yeah, exactly. So anyway,
difficult it is. Yeah, but
so
but, yeah.
we've done, and it was really depressing. So after the before starting the IVF, we decided with my husband taking a break, and we took 6 months. We moved, we changed houses, we bought our house, we moved to France, whatever, and we attacked from, you know, from the new start. And so we did the first stimulation. I think I remember the first transfer, I did it under the the partial anesthesia, and I was not supporting that very well, and we had 3 embryos only. So, and we were prepared, they asked us like, do you want to transfer 1 or 2? Because you have to be ready for twins. And we were like, yeah, okay, that's fine with us. And like my husband had these dreams that we are having twins and stuff like that. And the first transfer didn't work. And it was really like, like, you know, because like there was no reason why it's not working. We didn't have any medical issue. So we were like, why is it not working? I remember I was so depressed. And then, you know, we had one more transfer and they said like, this is still part of the first, you know, IVF, because the IVF cycle is considering like if you have as many eggs, like until you go through them, it's still like one try. So they were like, oh, but, you know, I was like, does it even make sense to transfer only one? You know, like it's not gonna work, like why? Anyway, it was a failure again. And again we took a break because it was hard for the body. And then we did another try, and it was different because I had a friend that were doing, I had a couple of friends that they were doing IVF at the same time as we did, and it worked for them. And I was like, wait, hang on a second. Like, there is a hope, you know? And I remember that the second transfer we did, it was very sunny and it was nice weather. And I was like, I was in, before the day, I was in the stage, like, I will go to, till the end, to the, like, to the 4 cycles that it's paid by CNS, just to tell myself that I did everything, you know? Everything possible, and if it's not gonna work, then you know what the hell, it's not gonna work, and it's not meant to
what
be.
You could
exactly and we had, I don't remember, we had like 16 embryos, and we made a transfer and it worked, so we transferred 2 embryos and it worked, so I got pregnant, and we had still like, I don't know how many, 12 frozen embryos. And so I had my pregnancy, didn't well really well at the end. Yes, so it was twins. Yeah, so it was, I had the twins, very, very well, very easygoing pregnancy. I was not sick, like everything was great until the 7 months. And then day before Christmas, we find out that one of the kids were deceased, that the heartbeat wasn't there.
And so, how did you find out? It was because you felt it or you had a checkup?
No, so... I had a checkup. And I don't know, I just, in one day, you know how it is, like your first pregnancy, so you don't want to freak out. It, maybe this is the Eastern European thing, like you don't ask for help. Yeah. Because like nobody tell you, and I didn't want it to be that person like you go, you know, like you can go to the, like at the time at Beler, they told you like if you have questions or if you feel something you can come to the emergency, and I was like, oh come on, I'm not gonna go for, you know, like for
I don't want things, to like... be, I don't want to be strange, I don't want to
exactly
be...
and I had like
annoy anybody
exactly and I had this I had this pain, but it happened several times. Like I had this little pain and I went there and nothing, you know, they said like everything's fine. So I had this little pain while, you know, running errands. And I was like, well, I just lay down and it will be fine. Mm. And I had the checkup. And no, I was doing the haptonomy classes, you know, it's like when you feel the, like you communicated with the kid, like by touching with my husband.
And we couldn't know that.
We couldn't, everybody was like, wow, it's great. So we did it. And I mean, I'm, to be honest, I wasn't impressed, but okay.
You did.
and she was like, oh, the other baby, like, oh, he must be asleep. He must be asleep. Like, he doesn't want to communicate or whatever. And we're like, yeah, okay. I mean, you know, nobody prepares you for that. And like, you don't want to know about it. And so I had a checkup on the 22nd of December with my doctor. And he was like weird, but like I didn't really notice because I didn't want to notice, but my husband did. Because they were telling like, you know, they have these weird positions, like they are like crossed, you know, one on another and whatever. But tomorrow you see the, you know, the echography, the twin pregnancies is considered as a risky one. So basically you have more echography checkups than the normal pregnancy. So I was having one every month. And so I had it next day, so the 23rd of December. And funnily enough, we were waiting in the meeting room, I mean on the waiting room, and we couldn't find the names. And we eventually find the second name. And we came through and, you know, so he did the checkup. He's like, yeah, okay, this is your kid and this is the heartbeat and whatever. And I remember myself telling him like, oh, but yesterday we had a checkup and like he couldn't find the heartbeat. And the doctor said, well, it's because there is none. And I was like, you know, like I'm a very pragmatic person. Like I need technical details, you know,
okay.
Like.
But I mean, nobody is this pragmatic. Come on, what you said before we started recording? You said you were so lucky and that you didn't meet any cold people taking care of you. Oh my God!
He didn't put it in a like cold way. You know, it was not cold way. It's maybe it's because of nature of my characters. Like I don't like to be infantilized. You know, he just put it out there, and for me that was convenient. For me, that's the way. Like I need technical details. You know, I need logical reason for everything I'm searching out. So as knowing that pregnancy, like that twins pregnancy, is a risky one, there is always a little something behind. Like I hope everything is fine, and you know, I imagine like, oh my, like you know, when you hear or read in the radio, like if something like this happened to me, like the world will fall apart, and you know, and I will fall apart and everything. And I remember he told me that, and I was like, and there was nothing, like I felt nothing. I was like empty because like your brain doesn't take it that there is something.
Yeah,
happening.
I think it's basically a state of shock. Because this exactly. is like, yeah, it doesn't really travel
exactly.
into the brain yet. Just, there is like a block, I think, that...
So then, you know, when I had some exams, so I was like really like zombie style. I went to the reception and I said, look, like, okay, so this happened. I have to do exams and whatever. And I went to have my blast withdrawn and I went home and I crashed down.
Yeah, of course.
And... And so this was Christmas Day. We're supposed to have a family around and everything. So, of course, you know, we canceled everything. And I mean, I say we canceled everything. My husband did, because I honestly, he did the ungrateful work to tell everyone. Mm-hmm. I just called my parents to tell them. And then it was like, then there was, so that happened, man. That happened on so 23rd of December, and they told me that, you know, the natural reaction of the body would be to expose the, you know,
but
the
just one or both at that
one, just in, one, in,
so and that was actually normally the body would do the expel the
exactly
the one without the heartbeat.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But this was really, really late stage. And because I was beginning of the seventh month, and the surviving twin was the one that was at the bottom, so they couldn't. So they have to stop the, you know, the delivering basically.
Okay.
So so on the 28th of December or 27th, I got contractions. I went to the hospital, and they kept me there with the medication making everything necessary for my other twin to evolve in a good manner and in a, you know, as healthy as possible, and, you know, to come mm-hmm. to an end, successful end. And I stayed in the hospital until end of January. And then I was released to home, because basically they kept me until 32nd week, because you come like from the great premature, you know.
Oh yeah, so
they have like from 28 to 32, you're like the great premature, and then from 32 to 36, it's just mm-hmm. in brackets premature, and then you can deliver. So I was released on the week of 32, and then I was at home with medication for. Then I went home. For a month with medication, but I was coming to the clinic every second day for exam, which okay. was extremely exhausting, because mm-hmm. you never know what to expect.
Yeah, it must be mentally, it must be really, really insane.
And it was really hard, because it's like pure schizophrenia, because mm-hmm. you know that happened, but since you have your belly, it's not concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going there every day. I was having the doctor, and he was like, "Oh, are you still here? You will be delivering anytime now. Oh, are mm-hmm. you still here? You will be like," we mm-hmm. were laughing. Despite all of this, I have good memories on this. And then eventually, I delivered naturally, okay. without C-section, without anything, 36 plus two, my two sons.
Wow.
So I went really, really long way.
So you delivered both of the babies.
And I did birth. So I gave birth. So my son, who is today 8, mm-hmm. So he was the first one. And then I delivered the deceased baby. And that was a bit hard, because, you know, you imagine yeah. after 2 months in a... in the belly, it's not great, so there were some complications and everything, but it was natural, it was easy. I think it lasted honestly like 2 hours, mm-hmm. like from the point I came to hospital until I delivered. And I had really good memory on my delivery. I mean, okay. we laughed a lot. I didn't have to explain anything, because everybody knew me, because I was there, like, honestly.
You were
like,
living
home.
There. You were
exactly.
Yeah, it was your
I
home.
Was living there, basically. And I had really, really good team of people around me. I mean, I had psychologists, the doctors, the nurses. I have no bad words to say to them. It was really, really great.
I would like to say at this point, because I found it also, like, yes, you said that you were heartbroken at stages, but I love it how now you are able to talk about it and you know, laugh and say everything, because my heart is breaking when I hear this, because it must have been so horrid. But I think that this will really give hope to people, you know, to people who might be at the same situation as you were then.
But this is the thing, and this was the thing why I wanted to, like, because this is out of my comfort zone, you know, talking about this.
Absolutely.
But I found that this is such a taboo. And you know, as I said, like, I was at the first when I found out, I was really angry, because I was like, why nobody prepared me for this, you know? Because I found out that this is actually quite a common situation. You know, that a lot of, it's true that a lot of twin pregnancies like end up earlier, that, you know, but it's not so rare to come to this late stage. And nobody really like warn you about this. They tell you like it's a risky pregnancy, but that's it. You know, there are no, and I mean, I can understand that when you're trying to conceive child and once you get happy and everything, you don't want to hear this kind of stuff. But maybe that's the pragmatic person in me, that like I wanted to have like heads up, you know, that it might happen.
But wouldn't it? Because I think that for many people, it could mean that they would worry, you know, unnecessarily.
Yeah.
You know, like the and panic and anxiety and so I mean it's tricky to decide what to do.
Absolutely. And again, and I was a bit on my own on this journey. Because as I said, I had great support from like the family and people around me, but I needed to talk to someone who had similar experience, you know. And I found someone recommended me a book that was about that. It was a different story, but it was about twin pregnancy loss, and it really helped me out. And ever since, I try to help, you know, in the community and support, maybe talk about this, because it's a risk, you know. Like if you're willing to take the pregnancy risk, you should know that that there is such risk and it can happen. And it became really, really concrete once I delivered, because suddenly it became real, you know, like instead of, and, you know, you have people around you, because it was late stage and because I was already on maternity leave. And it happened like for a couple of times that some people come like, oh, so you had the twins, and you're like, you're not prepared for the question, because you know what happened. You somehow made your peace with it. If I can say so, because you can't really, but like you somehow get used to more or less to the situation. You came home with one baby instead of two. And then someone asks you like, oh, so you had a, and you're like, well, no. And that makes people uncomfortable, because you have to explain. But it shouldn't make them uncomfortable, because it happens, you know?
You know, I think that, well, that's a bit different topic, but it's very real as well. I mean, it applies to any kind of grief, because we are not taught about, like, when my mother died when I was quite young. She was 16. Okay, she wasn't 16. I was 16. But you know, and then you see that people just start getting strange around you, because they don't know, you know, they would love to help you. It's like, I feel it also myself sometimes, you know, when somebody's parents die, you know, now that we are getting older and stuff like that. I also, it's hard to really choose the right way to approach the person who is grieving, because they are going through shit and you know it, but you don't know how to talk to them. And we are not taught this. I think this should be really...
Absolutely. And this is the thing that I learned, that, I mean, I'm not good with feelings, like really not. And I'm really like always like, I feel for you. I really do, but I don't know what to tell you. So my experience is like, you don't have to say, like, you don't have to say, like, I know how you feel, because you don't.
No, but you like, don't. Even a person who went through the exact same thing as you, it doesn't mean that they feel the same way.
Exactly.
They can understand technicalities.
So the only thing is like to say is like, I don't know how you feel, but I'm here for you if you need me.
Yes,
end of the story, you know, don't go any further. And if the person want to talk to you, then she will talk to you, and that's enough. Anyway, so I had my kid, and it was really, really difficult the first year, because Like retrospectively, I can say it was difficult. I didn't feel it that way at the time because mm-hmm. like you don't have a time, you know, when you lose a child and you don't bring home any, then you have time to mourn. And mm-hmm. this is something I didn't have because I had to take care of the mm-hmm. of the baby. So you are like happy for one kid, but in the same time you are like weird, feeling weird because you are mourning. But do you have the right to mourn because you still mm-hmm. came home with one baby and he needs you? And you know, so it's really, really difficult kind of situation. And then after a year, my husband told me like, oh, but you know, like let's have another child. And I was definitely not ready because mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, grieve, I didn't mourn. And but I was like, I am 39 or 38 mm-hmm. and like clock is ticking. It was very clear for me from the beginning, I don't want to have a kid after 40. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, let's go for it, because like it took so much time for the first one, you know, so it will never. And I changed jobs and we did like unfreeze the embryos that we had, and the first transfer was successful.
And was it again multiple embryos?
Oh, yes. It was again, we transferred two mm-hmm. and we went to Rome mm-hmm. and I started to bleed. So I was mm-hmm. like completely freaked out mm-hmm. and I called the nurses and they were like, oh, don't worry, it can indeed mm-hmm. mean something, but it cannot mean anything. Mm-hmm. And so when we came back, I went to see the checkups, and well, I lost one of the, you know, mm-hmm. embryos, but there was still one viable, and that's my daughter. And so she's six today.
Yeah.
And we had still a couple of embryos frozen, mm-hmm. and my husband still had a hope.
For a third one.
For another one. But I said, like the, you know, factory closed. I had my daughter. I was 39, and I said, as I said before, after 40, I didn't mm-hmm. feel. And my daughter's pregnancy was really like, you know, I had it all, like, you know, the morning sickness, the like I couldn't eat anything, I couldn't feel anything. It was horrible, everything. And the worst, and you know, every year they send you this protocol, like, do you want to continue? Like, do you want to keep mm-hmm. the embryos, or do you like, can we like use them mm-hmm. for research or whatever they do with it? And, and I was like, I'm sure I'm not going to, I don't want another kid. And, but my husband was like, oh, let's wait for a year. Let's wait for a year. And he was the one, he had the difficult time to like, oh, you know, maybe, are you sure? Are you sure? Mm-hmm. But the, so we eventually stopped trying. And then I got pregnant 3 years ago.
Like naturally?
Yes, which was weird. And I realized because I was thirsty. I was sitting in my office and I was like, oh, I'm thirsty. And I'm like not a thirsty person. I was like, hang on a second. Like when you're thirsty, it means you're pregnant.
Oh, really?
I went to the check, but it was a clear egg. It was not viable. So I had to have a chemical interruption of the pregnancy. So yeah, that's pretty much.
God damn you, nature! Look at that. It's really wow. That's quite a story, really, because it was supposed to be about the infertility, but I think that the twin loss is also a big topic, I think.
I mean, the thing is, as I said at the beginning, I think it's very good that there are nowadays new communities supporting each other, like, you know.
And I think thanks to this, I mean, there is many downsides of the internet, like especially if you have kids, I think, but this is such a, you know, such an big opportunity for people to really to share, because even if it's a rare thing, which I mean with twins I think it's rather rarer than infertility, yeah. Because as I've researched and the WHO web page says that every sixth person in their productive age experiences infertility. Mm. And there is a lot of data missing from, you know, certain countries, so it could be more. So, but for twins, Not every pregnancy is a twin pregnancy, and then not every is a loss in the later stage, so it's probably rarer. But if you look worldwide, you find many people, and this is why I think that internet is a good thing, and this is why I'm doing what I'm doing here, to give hope in for people who must be, I cannot imagine how horrible this must have been, and to show, yes, that there is a way through, and you get through it, and you will be all happy and funny as you are. So
I mean, it was a long day, because I'm not gonna lie, I seek for help. I think when my daughter was one, it really hit me, because my husband, he always said that I'm like a locomotive, you know, like I go against the wall and you cannot stop me. So I was just like in a move, you know, and then suddenly it hit me, and it was the other way around. I passed under the train, and I really had whatever you want to call it, postpartum depression, or you know, nervous breakdown, or whatever. And I went to see a therapist that I actually met in when I was in a Boller clinic that was assigned to me to help me with the loss. And it took me a couple of years to go and talk to her on a weekly basis. And until we stopped.
Didn't they, for example, suggest this to you after, you know, after the birth? Because it would be,
you know, I had, I was, but I just felt like, you know, this is the thing, like, you know, when you are in the hospital and you don't feel it, because as I said, it's very, very, you know that it's there, but it's not real, because they are still in your belly, you know? And then, you know, you just get sucked into the whatever
motherhood,
whatever motherhood is. And you just didn't realize, you know. So, but then indeed, in one point I said to my husband, like, I can't do this anymore. So I seek help, and I discovered that there is a whole kind of, you know, big community of people that are helping, because I think that as many people, you can be surrounded with good support and friends and family. Sometimes things are easier to be told to a person who is stranger.
Yeah.
Because there might not be a judgment, or, you know, because there is not knowledge of your history, or whatever reason behind there is. And and sometimes you just need to know that it's going to be fine. So, you know, so I know that I have met myself few girls, we exchanged together, that I hope that I, you know, somehow supported them and gave them the hope. And that's what I said to myself, like, my story might be rare, might be not, but if it can help someone, to just to tell them, like, it's hard, I'm not gonna lie, it's hard, but there is a sun in the end of the tunnel. And I mean, we're gonna make it, you know. And to be honest, as I was saying, that I had this couple of friends that was doing the IVF with me. I was the kind of person, because everyone was like, everything, you know, happens for a reason, and you have to think like positively, and you know, it's and I was always like, what? Like I will like punch you in the face if you tell me once again, like, you have to think positively.
Everything sucks.
Exactly. I was like, And I don't know, I just, as I said, the day I went to make my transfer, it was sunny, and I felt bad, and I felt good, and I felt the sun on my face, and I was like, this is going to work, because I feel good, you know, it's like,
it did. So yeah, positive attitude is good, but sometimes it must be hard at times. You cannot force it on yourself. Also, this is like you either feel it or you don't. And with this hormonal roller coaster that the infertility treatments are, is not always easy. You know? That's for sure. But when we were talking about like how your friends were pregnant and that you still managed to feel happy for them. I mean, you're better than me, because I mean, because I miscarried twice and I was like, bah! And then I saw like my friends. None of my friends were pregnant at the time, I think, luckily, but I saw like a strangers pregnant, you know, in a shop, and you know, I was like, I just hate you. It was really sad, you know, because normally when I see a pregnant lady, oh, baby,
I know what you mean, because I was like, you start noticing pregnant ladies around you, and you're like,
they were everywhere,
exactly, and you're like, is it normal? Like, where did they appear suddenly? You know,
they are after me. They are here just to, you know, make me sad, and they are horrible people, pregnant people.
And so, there is a lot of things like you're thinking like, why? I know that I had like from the beginning this kind of like feeling that like there was something wrong with me, but because as I said, I come from the Eastern Europe, and I had, you know, there was not the contraception and everything. And I was probably smarter than my friends, because I was on the contraception like very early, I think 14 or something, not for like, you know, intercourse reason, but for like, I think it was at the time I had like very bad acne, and they treated it with the contraception.
Yeah, I know that. I think they still do.
And I had a lot of friends, like they felt pregnant and they had to go to the, you know, abortion. And I was like, I never had that, you know, so there's something wrong with me. And I was like, okay, but on the other hand, you were having contraception. So, you know, but you know, you doubt yourself, like, why did it happen to me? Because like they didn't find any reason why.
It was, again, the unexplained infertility.
Exactly.
It's just like,
So it's it's always you trying to question everything, like, okay, so when I was younger, and there was also this this point that I Alice mentions as well, that like sometimes in the journey you become alone in your relationship as well, because you become very much target oriented, you know. And I know that with the stimulation when we started, it was it's funny today, it's not funny, it wasn't funny then,
but it's good, like, keep laughing, that's good.
When you're starting, they'll tell you like, okay, so your ovaries are stimulated, it became, you know, you go to echographies to see how they are big, and they're like, okay, so now you have like we have put the injection, and now you have like 2 days window, you have to have sex. And you're like,
yay, the romance.
And then, you know, if it can destroy a couple, you know, I mean, it's in one point, at the beginning it's funny, and then, you know, in one point it's like, my husband's like, at that time he was my boyfriend, he's like, oh, I have flu, I have a fever and I'm sick. And I was like, no, you can't, like, we have 2 days, you know, we have 18 hours, like, you have to perform. So it's funny today. It's not funny after a while, especially if you take long, because, you know, all the romance disappear, because you are really going for something.
It's a different, you know, you are then very, very goal oriented, right?
Exactly.
But apparently I guess that your husband proved a keeper, because I mean, five years of this and you are still together, I think that it made you as strong as they get, right?
Yeah,
couples. So
he luckily is here, and he is very, very big support. I'm very lucky
great.
To have him.
It's great to see. I mean, if there is nothing else good out of the whole borderline horror story from my point of view, then there is, of course, your children, because they you will say they were absolutely worth it, will you not? Of course you will say.
I will, absolutely.
Plus then, yeah, you know that what your husband is made of, which is a good stuff apparently.
No, he is. He is. I have to say, he was really great support, and in a good and a bad. I mean, you know, sometimes I had to look for him because he had tendency to disappear.
Yeah, but he also deal with, because on men, I think it's just as well. It's a different kind of hard, because of course they don't have to go through all the, you know, hormones and injections or whatever, the transfers and stuff. But at the same time, I think it was Alice who mentioned last time. They wish they could help, but they can't. You know, it's like with the breastfeeding, they can't help you there, really, like with the breastfeeding or, you know, with going through the transfers. No, they can't. And maybe sometimes they would like to. So, but okay, on that note, I think this is a good message. To find out what your partners are made of and appreciate them every day and yourself, because what you went through was something. So say, yeah, you did a great job and you are awesome, in case you didn't know. So that's my message for the end of the episode. Do you have something you would like to pass on the listeners?
No, I just probably listen to yourself. I didn't do that enough, and seek for help. It's very important to seek for help. For there are communities, there are professionals, and seek for support, because I think that's the most important thing.
And it's out there. There are people who want to help and who can help. If it's just
absolutely
by listening or just giving you a hug and letting you cry and, you know, whatever it is that you need. So don't never hesitate to ask for help. And if it's not, you know, if it's a professional which doesn't suit you, go for find another one. It's a base.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks so much, Linda. It was. I mean, I want to say I really feel that way. It was fun, even though it was not fun, if you know what I mean. Thanks so much for coming and being so brave and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I hope that this episode will help as many people as possible.
So do
Thanks
I.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, that went well. Thanks for joining us today in Interview with You. I hope you enjoyed the time as much as we did, and that it brought something positive to your day and to your life. Don't forget to get in touch if you want to be my next guest, or if you have anything else you want to share with me. The contact details are in the description of the episode. There is a link to a Facebook post where you can share your thoughts and all the contacts. Do not hesitate to follow the Interview with You Facebook page or me on Instagram at Joost Jaska. Remember, both Jaska and Joost are spelled with J's. The European quirks, right? Anyway, go ahead and follow my social media so that you do not miss anything exciting. I look forward to hearing from you and to possibly having the next interview with you.
You and I.